Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. So this time I have a really special announcement for everybody.
He's going to sing a song.
Yeah. The special announcement is that I have a new light in the background. You can see it in the wide view. And it's supposed to be green, but it's kind of a cheap one. And I couldn't get it connected to the Wi-Fi yet, so it's kind of greenish yellow. But I'm going to work on it. And that's the announcement for the week.
Paul.
Yes.
Are you telling me that you're the announcement that you paused our intro for is that you have a cheap light that doesn't work?
I mean, it works. It turns on. Anyways, welcome back to the podcast, everybody. Hope your week's been good. How's
Happy
your week?
January.
You're saying that like this is like the first podcast in January. It's like the maybe third one.
I mean, for me, it feels like the first. I don't know.
Yeah, how's your week been?
Rough.
Been good. My week's been eventful. Anyways, thumbs up the video if you're watching the premiere, or if you're watching later.
Ones in the chat, premiere gang, rise up.
Yeah, channel members growing, thriving. We hit the 100 goal. I think now we're at like 107 or 108. So I think the goal for like the first half of this year, I guess, is just like 150 channel members.
Oh, the number of Pokemon that Professor Oak allegedly claimed that for to be in the Pokedex, but he already knew there were more than 150 Pokemon and still told us that dumb.
Well, you had to wonder if he knew. Like,
there's a movie where he is a child and goes back in time.
Okay, like, yeah, I guess that's true.
So he had to have known there were more than 150.
He just knew what was in the region.
How did he know about Mewtwo exactly? How did he know?
He probably made it. Like he was one of the scientists.
Because like, if he'd have said 149, I would have been with that. But he said 150.
Yeah, that's true. It's actually 151. So, yeah, cool. Hope you guys are enjoying your weeks. We have a review to kick off this week's episode, as we often do. This one comes from InGab19. So this is, of course, an Apple podcast. We always love it if you guys will leave us a kind review. Sure helps out.
We appreciate that.
Hey, guys, I'm a new Yu-Gi-Oh! Player. I collected as a kid, but definitely did not play by the rules. Relatable. And have been enjoying the pod. Content creators like yourselves are great for the game. I just wanted to call out that maybe in spite of Konami, although they seem to be learning with things like the rarity collections and good deck packs, there are new players joining the game and enjoying modern Yu-Gi-Oh! I think the combination of Master Duel and the rise of content creators on YouTube have made the game much more accessible. Well, this guy's really giving us our flowers.
Yeah, look at that.
You know, I don't make that much Master Duel content. But when I do, it's fun.
But you play a lot of Master Duel.
Yeah. I've been going to locals for a bit now, and it's been a lot of fun. Just wanted to share, as I feel like the people with understandable complaints with the game tend to be louder. Keep up the great work. You know, I actually kind of like this review, because this person is basically saying, like, even though there's, like, a lot of complaints and stuff's not perfect, he is enjoying.
Yeah, and they're not making that sound like, you know, that's in affront to us. Yeah, Paul, you hate Yu-Gi-Oh, but I love Yu-Gi-Oh. You're not one of those.
Yeah, I read a couple comments like that every week. I do appreciate this, because I think, like, it's important to point out that, like, despite Yu-Gi-Oh's issues, like, people are playing this game. You know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
People are out there, they're playing, they're at events, they're at locals, they're on Master Duel, like, they're watching, they're reading, like, writing all this stuff. Like, there is still, like, stuff that happens around this game. Like, it's not all doom and gloom. So.
And not just them. You know, I build decks like a motherfucker. I build some decks.
Yeah. Halak will build a deck. Mm-hmm. May not play a deck.
But I'll build them every set.
No. That's actually kind of relatable. Like, sometimes I'm just like, I kind of want to build this deck. I just might not ever really get a chance to play it. To me, that's where Master Duel comes in. Because, like, I find it's easier to build and play something quickly on Master Duel compared to, like, in real life, it's, like, a little harder.
Like, playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Is, you know, that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But collecting Yu-Gi-Oh! To me is a whole other thing. And I like to have my physical Yu-Gi-Oh! Cards. No matter how much physical Yu-Gi-Oh! I play, some weeks I might play quite a bit, and then there'll be some weeks where I play not at all. But you know what I have to have?
The cards.
I have to have the cards. It's a part of my very soul.
Supreme Darkness premieres this weekend.
I can't wait.
Yeah, that's going to be cool. I'm hoping that we can make our way out to a sneak peek and take a peek at what there is to get.
I mean, I need those new evil heroes.
Yeah, I know we've been talking a lot about what we're looking forward to, but just to reiterate, I know you're looking for evil heroes. Mm-hmm. I am looking for the extra Mermail cards. Like the Mermail Atlantean stuff. That's kind of my main goal.
There's a new Metalmorph cards. I want those too.
Yeah, so we wanted to do a fire versus water theme duel. And I'd been trying to do it. That's
still on the table.
It's still on the table. And then I realized like half the Atlantean support comes out in this set. So I've just been like, oh, whatever. I'll just wait for it to all come out now. So
because Paul did do quite a bit of testing for that theme duel. And you said that the Atlantean deck is significantly weaker.
Yeah, than the Fire King deck is stronger than the Water deck. So, like, hopefully this new stuff will kind of put them on even ground. It's a tough one.
Now, my logic was I will play the Fire King deck so poorly that will more than make up for my deck being stronger, but...
Who's to say? I just want to make an entertaining duel for
them. With some practice, I can play Fire Kings well. I just have to practice it.
Anyway, though, thank you so much for the review in Gab19. We always love hearing from the people. We
appreciate you.
So, I guess that brings us to the Yu-Gi-Oh! News section, which, once again, is like kind of small this week, I would say. Like, it feels like more of the card game news has been... The space has been taken up a lot by, like, this Pokemon kind of controversy that's been happening, which we'll get to. But
What happened?
Like, you know, like this... What is that, Evolution Pack or whatever?
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, that whole thing. But just to kind of get a little bit of quick Yu-Gi-Oh! Stuff in, so I saw on Yu-Gi-Oh! News TCG, the only other site that I will give a seal of approval for finding news.
It's the official Twitter account for the Pot of Greed. Yeah. We just co-opted. Not our Twitter account.
Yeah, we're in cohorts with
it. But I might keep saying it is.
Yeah, so there's not like a whole bunch, but they've shown like a couple of really cool new judge mats. Like there's one that features Silo Hat Rabbit.
Love that little guy.
Judges can get.
Except for when someone else uses it against me.
You know, if you judge a tier 3 event or higher. There's also a new Fiendsmith Lacrima playmat I saw.
I got to cop that.
Yeah, I know she's a popular new monster. And I think they also did one for the Malice. Like
Malice Severus?
No, like the Malice girl. What is her name? Featuring Malice Q Hearts.
That's Red Queen
something? Yeah, I guess so. You know what I've noticed?
What's that?
The judges get the good mats.
Well, yeah.
Like, I mean, why? Because I'm always like, they should be making these mats for people. I guess they have to provide judges with something that feels exclusive so that, like, you know, your judging doesn't feel like it went.
I mean, judges need something unnoticed. They can sell so they can pretend like they're paid.
Yeah. I think they've changed that now. Like, I think the judges get, like, a little bit of money now.
Oh, good.
I don't know if that's...
I will never forget the roving groups of judges at non, like, official Yu-Gi-Oh! Events just trying to move their, like, huge collection of mats.
Yeah. Which, I guess those do go for a good...
Yeah, even, like, an older, not as popular judge mat, you still can sell for at least, like... $25 to $30. And that's for a non-popular mat. For the hot ones?
If a judge who listens to this podcast can maybe correct our potential misinformation on that. Like, I don't know how payment or anything works for the judges right now. But
that's true. We don't know.
If somebody wants to, you know.
But I have paid a few judges. I'm not saying who, but I've got some judge mats.
Put some truth into the air. Okay, also, they have shown that the Supreme Darkness little... I don't know what you call these, like these packs where it's like three booster packs and a token. At least
call it a bundle
in the EU, but in the US they've been doing the ones where it's like four packs and a token. But either way, they've announced these. They showed some Europe like product ones, and they've shown the five collectible token cards that you can get for Supreme Darkness. So this is about what you'll probably find in a store, like a Walmart or a Target. And there's an Odeon token, which I guess is to like kind of promote the new Odeon stuff coming out in Maze of the Master. Also, a Supreme King Jaden, I think is his name, or it's the Supreme, this guy?
That's Supreme King. I mean, that's Jaden, but he's a Supreme King. You don't refer to him by his former slave name.
Yeah, another Kaiba token, which I guess this is supposed to go with.
Overdone.
Was it supposed to go with the Blue Eyes structure deck, I think?
My friendship with Kaiba is over.
There's a shark, and then there's...
That's overdone, too.
This guy from 5Ds who plays TGs. I don't remember his
Bruno.
Name.
Bruno.
Yeah, so you can get one of these tokens and, yeah.
That guy, wait, is that Bruno or is that,
He has his blue hair. Name.
There's another name I'm thinking of. Because he wrecked me in Duel Links. That deck was annoying.
Yeah, so, cool. You guys can, like, pick up some of these token cards. What do you think of these like little token packs that they've been doing?
Specifically the tokens themselves?
Well, just the structure of it. Like,
I mean, I like the idea of being able to buy instead of just buying like a blisters one by one, I like the idea of being able to buy a set of blisters at somewhat of a discount.
Yeah.
And if I get a little something extra, like a little token, a little die or something, then I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at all. I do get mad when I buy multiples of them and I get the same token card three times in a row. That's infuriating, but that's...
I mean, I guess it's like...
As booster packs.
Yeah, that's kind of the nature of buying these little RNG products. Other than that, though, not a lot of new Yu-Gi-Oh! News that I've heard. So, I guess we just kind of move on to the...
Kick it to card game news.
The card game things. We probably missed something. I'm sure someone's
gonna... I'm sure there's something in the Yu-Gi-Verse has happened and we're just blind.
Yeah, wouldn't be the first time. So here's a cool little announcement from Pokemon. The Pokemon Company has made a statement around the new Scarlet and Violet Prismatic Evolutions products. You might remember last week how we were talking about there were some card shops that were like, yeah, we're not even going to like stock this product.
Which is wild. That's a card shop saying, we are passing up on the money we'll make because y'all wildin'.
Yeah, something about like allocations to stores got slashed and the demand for this was so high. And like shops just didn't want to deal with the theft and the harassment of the employees and like the fighting and the violence. I saw one video, I don't know if this was like for this set, but I remember I saw some video where like people were at like a Costco and they were, people were like fighting to get like, to get the ETBs off the pallets at the stores.
Yikes.
So.
This isn't Pokemon related, but I do remember when One Piece cards were at an all-time like high as far as their value. I remember there was a story going around that a shop owner claimed to not get any One Piece cards.
Oh.
And then just took them all and sold them online.
Just keeping them for himself.
The valuable cards can make people do
kind
of unethical and crazy things. I would hope that we as a card gaming community, and yes, that includes Pokemon players and collectors, that we can be above that. Like, yeah, all our cards have value, but all of our binders have value in them. Well, let's relax with the new stuff.
Right? Here's what they have to say. We're aware that some fans may experience difficulties purchasing certain Pokemon trading card games, Scarlet and Violet Prismatic Evolutions products at launch due to high demand impacting availability. We understand this inconvenience can be disappointing for fans, and we're actively working to print more of the impacted Pokemon TCG products as quickly as possible and at maximum capacity to acknowledge this. Reprinted products are expected to be available at participating retailers as soon as possible to help ensure more fans receive opportunities to access Scarlet and Violet Prismatic Evolutions. In addition, more new products from the Scarlet and Violet Prismatic Evolutions lineup will be launching in the coming months. So I guess that's like ETBs and those other, you know, Pokemon has so many variations.
Yeah, the different product styles and sizes.
We'd like to thank the community for their continued support and patience as we work to deliver this highly anticipated expansion to fans.
All I heard is this product's going to come out in multiple waves, so get ready for battles on multiple fronts.
Well, listen, I think that it's nice of them to have acknowledged this as quickly as they did. Because, you know, like some, they could very well just not. You know what I mean? Like they could just kind of choose to be like, tough, deal with it. We're just going to release this product how we release it. So, I mean, you know, the fact that they kind of are taking some responsibility and like making a statement on it, I think is a good thing. People seem to be very receptive to this in the comments as well. People are happy. You know, thank you for the update. Thank you for like letting us know that you're at least aware of this. You're going to try to like take some steps to make
which
it
better. That is good, right? Because there will be a lot of people, at least with the first wave of this product, they won't make it their hands on it because they're not willing to fight for it.
Yeah,
literally with a dagger and everything.
Yeah, it's gonna just come down to like, you know, you're still gonna have to probably, it's still gonna be like probably in pretty high demand and all that, but at least like there's a assurance that like more is coming. Mm-hmm. And I think that's good. Still though, what it comes down to is like, this is a game where like there are just people who are only in it for money, and
money makes people do crazy things.
And as long as those people are in this space, there will never like be a perfect solution. But at least this is something. So,
and you know, you might argue that you gotta take the good with the bad. These people are the reason why the Pokemon TCG is the face of all card games.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like it's. Pokemon's the only game where, like, when controversies like this happen, it kind of tends to break into mainstream news circles a little bit, where it's like, you know, people are getting violent over these cards, or like shops aren't even stocking them because they're so...
That makes the Pokemon TCG's profile so high that you're guaranteed to get support for your game. The Pokemon company is paying attention to you. You know, there's a lot of card games that don't get that level of attention and support. And to some degree, it's because of the sheer amount of bad actors.
I might try to pick up a little Prismatic Evolutions. Like, I think it'd be...
Paul's getting in on it. He about to scalp.
Well, yeah, that's right. I'm going to get them and upsell them on eBay. No, I'm just kind of curious, like... You know, I remember the last Pokemon physical product that I bought was 151. That was, like, in 2023, maybe. So, I mean, I'm kind of curious, like, can I find it, like, you know, kind of in my city? Like, maybe I'll just go to these stores and, like, see.
Probably about to get pushed in the mouth.
Yeah, see if I have to. I just want to see, like, what is the process of buying it? Like, if I go to my Target, I go to a Walmart or whatever, like, will I find it there? How many will be there? Will there be, like, a crowd? Like,
someone's going to pull a knife out on you in the aisle.
Yeah, like, am I going to have cards. To fight for these packs or what?
Will like, are you going to fight for them? Are you going to give them up?
If someone threatens me, I'm out of there. I'm not dying for some Pokemon cards.
You see, but, for me, I feel like I got my Pokemon fix, the Pokemon TCG Pocket app. I open up at least a pack a day. I'm good. I don't think I ever need to open up a Pokemon pack again.
Yeah, I want to see what...
Unless there's a Tyranitar in there.
I mean, there's an Umbreon in here, and that's one of your favorites.
I do like Umbreon. So. Umbreon's the best evolution by far.
Cool. So, yeah, that's an update for the Pokemon TCG side of things. It's, you know, it's not. It's funny because this isn't even, like, a bad story. Like, it's a pretty good ending to a story, but it just does make you think, like, man, when Pokemon, like, when things go wrong in Pokemon, they're, like, they really, you know about it, so.
Right. And now it's time for my story about card theft.
Okay, well, who's stealing what?
Well, typically, it's a story about Pokemon cards being stolen. But in this case, it's Magic the Gathering cards that have gone
who's
missing.
Stealing the Magic cards?
The title reads, Thief Steals $60,000 in Magic the Gathering cards. Now, that's a chunk of change.
Oh, that's all the headline?
That's the headline.
Okay, so you didn't add that extra part in yourself. That was like just... No, that's a chunk of change.
That one's amazing.
Folks.
So in Milton, Pennsylvania, police are investigating the theft of valuable playing cards from a 40-year-old man in Union County. According to PSP Milton, between January 1st and December 23rd, someone took Magic Gathering cards from the man's property on Millmont Road, yada, yada, yada. The victim told police that someone got away with six cards worth about 10 grand each.
What are the cards? Do we know?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
There's a Black Lotus.
Yeah, I know that's a lot.
Two Mox Pearls.
I think
a Mox Sapphire, a Mox Emerald, and a Mox Jet Beta. Several miscellaneous cards were also reported stolen, valued together around $1,000. But those are serious money cards.
Oh, so the Mox cards are like named like Pokemon games, like Ruby and Sapphire and Emerald.
Yeah, they're all these precious jewels. Stones.
So this person had their cards, like someone, I guess, broke into like their home?
Yeah, it sounds like they got stolen from their house.
Oh, goodness.
Now, the interesting part to me is just it happened between January 1st and December 23rd. It sounds like this person left for the holidays.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Like, they were probably traveling for the holidays, which, like, that really sucks.
And then here's the thing. If they had $60,000 worth of Magic the Gathering cards and those were stolen, right? Mm-hmm. Someone had to have known those cards were there.
Yeah, that's how theft oftentimes works, though, isn't it? Like,
this isn't a regular, a random burglary, right?
Yeah, like, burglary and stuff like that is usually by people that you know, because, like, they would have to kind of know, be somewhat familiar with what you own, where you live, kind of what your routine is. Like, they probably knew this guy would be out of town, because he'd said it to them, because it's, like, probably somebody he was familiar with at the card shop or something, I don't know.
And then, the thing is, if I have $60,000... worth of cards, it would not be in a place that's easy to get to in my home. So that leads me to believe it's someone who's been to that house before.
Yeah, they probably knew where
they had to have known where the cards were.
God, that really sucks.
That is diabolical. And I hope that they catch the person and this guy gets his cards back, because
yeah, that's what it really comes down to.
If you if you have that much value in cards, that means something. It's not about, oh, this guy's rich, he has so much money. It's not about money. It's about the, like, the meaning in, like, your soul. That collection had to have meant a lot, more than just monetary value. And that's a real violation.
Yeah, I think that's another thing with theft, is that you never really feel comfortable in your own, like, home again. Like, if someone's... I don't even know that I'd be able to, like, sleep in there anymore. Like, that's how I've always felt. Like, if somebody, like, stole something from my house, like, I would just be like, oh, my God, like, I don't even want to, like, stay here. Can I get a... Get me an Airbnb until they find the guy and, like, put him... And even then, like, you can't fully recover that sense of, like, safety and security unless...
And then after all that, you have to remember, oh, yeah, that was like $60,000 worth of cards.
Yeah.
Like, that's bitter. Guys, stop stealing cards. Yeah, don't steal the cards.
It's not right.
Now, if the thief would like to reach out to the pod and let us know, like, how they stole the cards, I would be glad to critique their strategy and, you know, their method of doing so. Just go ahead and just email the pod. You know the email. Just...
I actually have another Magic the Gathering story.
Is this also theft?
No.
Oh.
But Wizards of the Coast is to test secret lair sales through WPN stores.
Is that like my virtual private network?
It does have the word network. So Wizards of the Coast has announced plans to start offering secret lair cards for Magic the Gathering through Wizards Play Network stores. The company will offer cards from Secret Lair X Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves to WPN stores to support draft events scheduled for this spring. So, this is another one of those cases where I have to, you know, remind everybody I don't really regularly play Magic, so I only know a little bit about this, but the Secret Lair's cards are, what are they again?
Exclusive collaborative drop,
mm-hmm.
where typically... It's some new cards that are a part of a collaboration, and then reprints of cards with that IP's artwork on them.
Right, and I know these are usually kind of in high demand because they're just like limited availability. I know they recently changed the way that you get them. I know you got the Marvel
Secret Lair. So Secret Rares used to be, you know, they used to be a made to order where essentially everybody who wanted them could get them. It just took forever and a day for them to actually get shipped to you. But now they just do the limited drop thing where you have to like camp their website and get in a long waiting list and pray there's still inventory by the time your number comes up.
Yeah. So it seems like it can be a little bit of a journey to get these cards and like
and oftentimes, sit and
wait at your computer, your phone.
Usually it means you just can't get them. A lot of people, they just have to miss out with that type of a system.
Yeah. Well, now they're going to have them at a few card shops. The company's offering WPN stores Secret Lair cards as a test to determine if this will be an effective way to provide mechanically unique cards to the fans. These will be the same non-foil cards available through the Secret Lair website and will be offered when the drop goes on sale there.
Interesting. So they said specifically the non-foil versions, because they have multiple foilings that you can purchase, you know, increasing price and value.
Yeah, so these are going to be like the kind of common versions, I guess.
I guess that means that common versions of future Secret Lairs might actually be very easy to get. Because, you know, the Secret Lair I bought, I got the non-foil versions, and even those are quite high online. But if those are if they're not easy to get, then anybody could get in on a Secret Lair. You know, it doesn't matter if they do.
Sounds like a net win.
It does sound good.
More people can get stuff. As part of the new test program, Wizards will offer non-foil borderless versions of legendary creatures from Secret Lair X Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves to support Spring Flourishes draft event scheduled from April 25th to May 25th. The cards are going to be produced in limited quantities and available through WPN stores while supplies last. So, if you were ever looking for some Secret Lair cards, maybe you felt like the process of, you know, getting online, like ordering and stuff,
was just a little bit too barrier.
Much for you. This just seems like this is a win. So, some real wins for Wizards and Pokemon this week. They're doing good.
Don't worry. I'm sure by next week we'll be
There might be some
like yelling and screaming about something Wizards did.
Some more controversy. But for now, I mean, it sounds like this is like a good thing for the average Magic the Gathering player. I think, especially because like Secret Lair, like it kind of one of the things that I always found kind of weird about it is just like, man, if you miss this, you just missed it. Like I remember, you know, we were at these like Magic shops when we were in Oregon, and like I'd see these old Secret Lair cards from just years ago, and it's like, man, I guess if you just weren't there, you just tough.
Yeah, you gotta pay that premium.
So, yeah, this sounds like this is a good thing, I would say.
I agree.
Anywho, back to you.
All right, so I don't have any more card game stories, do you?
I don't.
All right, then I'm moving on to gaming. This one caught my eye because it was kind of a ludicrous title.
Okay.
Critically acclaimed Steam shooter indefinitely on hold after dev reveals she's going to prison.
That's weird. I want to know more.
Yeah, okay. So Fortune's Run is a sci-fi immersive sim about surviving the industrial wreckage of Earth after humanity has escaped to the stars. The shooter RPG blew some critics away when they tried the demo back in 2023. Now the early access game's future has been plunged into uncertainty after its developer revealed she's going to prison. So the creator of Fortune's Run, who goes by Dizzy on Steam, announced Tuesday night that her past had caught up with her. This is a quote. I've been sentenced to prison for the next 3 years, she wrote. It's a long story, but I lived a very different life before I was a game developer, and okay, I wasn't living very well. My case is about 5 years old now. I've been going through the legal process the whole time I've been working on this. I have finally been found guilty and sentenced, and I'm going away next month.
That's so, like, intense.
That it really is. Like, and, oh, there's more.
What do they say?
It's a shame, but it's the consequences of my actions. I was a very violent person, and I hurt a lot of people in my life. Unfortunately, the sentence isn't going to help with that at all, but I guess we all know that. So the game isn't totally dead, but unfortunately, due to even further bad things happening, it's unclear what will happen. I feel like they're getting at that they shouldn't be, this sentence isn't justified because they've, that was in the past, not a different person.
Yeah, I'm a different person now. That was the old me.
But I'm trying to figure out what they mean by I hurt a lot of people. Like, violent hurt a lot of people.
They're taking kind of some accountability.
Which is good.
So wait, no, getting back to the game. So they're saying the game is shutting down or just...
It is not.
So they're just telling people that
the game's future is now hanging
uncertain
in the balance.
So like the game, I guess for now, it's like, what game is it again?
It's called Fortune's Run, which I've actually heard of this game before. Okay. Just from some random article. I didn't play it. I didn't demo it. Or I didn't even watch a trailer. I just heard of it.
Okay, curious. Yeah, I think, you know what this reminds me a little bit of? Is what? Like, remember like the NetEase people where like, they're the people
the high up.
There's like a money laundering thing. It's always weird when those sorts of stories come out where it's just like, yeah, these people who are kind of in charge of developing your favorite little game, they also are just super villains or something. I don't know. Like,
I would never be surprised when like, big wigs at a multi-million-dollar corporation are evil, but this is like a fairly independent game dev who really had a life, it seems.
Yeah, but I guess you know what, we'll take a positive spin on it. It's cool because it sort of shows like, hey, you know, you can always turn your life around. Like, just because you were involved in some seedy activity as a youngster, it doesn't mean that, you know, you can't like get away from that life and like learn game development and make something that people love. Like, it doesn't, you know, your past does not have to define you. Although I guess in this case it kind of is defining, because she's like, well, she's going to prison.
Well, but now like, I think Dizzy, the screen name, I think Dizzy will actually be now known more for this game, at least online, than for whatever violent acts they committed.
True.
Though, depending on how, it's only, what, this is a 3-year sentence, so it doesn't sound like they did anything too bad, but it sounds bad enough to warrant going to prison.
Yeah, that's true. Well, so here's some gaming like news that might be happening as they're watching the podcast. Because I've heard that the Switch 2 is supposed to be announced this week. Like, that was a rumor. It's going to be announced on Thursday. You're recording this on Wednesday evening. And so people are like, yeah, this is when Nintendo's going to do the thing. Although Nintendo hasn't said anything about like a Nintendo Direct.
And so this is a rumor.
So presumably it won't actually happen. But I guess like, because there have been so many leaked Switch 2, you know, images and mock-ups and all this stuff, that we will be getting information on the Switch 2 pretty soon. So I was considering when I first heard that, like I heard it last weekend. And I was like, okay, should we like push the podcast back a day just so we can talk about this Switch 2 reveal, because like it might happen on Thursday morning and we can give our reactions.
But what if it was? What if it's underwhelming? You know,
that's the thing. Oh, I don't think it's going to happen at this point.
Yeah,
because it just seems like, because typically Nintendo will announce their directs like 2 to 3 days in advance, and you just have to like wait for the direct, and like you'll kind of know. But since they haven't said anything, I took that to mean that, you know, it's everything is sort of fine, or like it's, you know, they're not going to announce it just yet. But if it has been announced when you're listening to this, then woo, Switch 2. And if not, then...
Or maybe it's been announced and everyone's very, like, underwhelmed, you know.
Yeah, we think whatever you think about
it. Yeah, our opinion's your opinion.
Yeah, we are strictly related to you. Okay, well, here's another, like, this is just like a random one because we've got some sort of bigger stories to talk about. So I just want to get this one out of the way first. Starbucks is ending its open door policy in North America. Customers must buy something to use the restroom or sit in the store.
Wait, we didn't have to buy anything to use the restroom?
Apparently not.
You know how many times I've bought a singular cup of coffee just to use a Starbucks restroom?
Yeah, so I didn't know about this, but I actually was trying to do a little bit of research on the story just so it didn't, it's like, okay, probably just brought a headline. Like, what does it matter? Starbucks has been struggling in the last few years. As it happened, just like with sales and stuff. And
many brick and mortars do.
A big thing people actually cite as like part of the problem with Starbucks, outside of, you know, increasing prices and things like that, is that they've become a less and less inhabitable space on the inside. So I don't know if you remember kind of back when Starbucks almost got jokes for being like a hipster kind of coffee place, yeah, or whatever. People would go into Starbucks and enjoy the ambiance and like bring their laptop and do homework or like write reports or, you know, remote work or whatever, from a comfy little cozy space inside of Starbucks. And they almost had that like vintage sort of, you know, the furniture and the, it's, you know what I mean? Like the inside of the Starbucks kind of felt.
As someone who's hung out at many a dank coffee shop, Starbucks, it does not compare even slightly.
Well, that's the thing, is I almost feel like it wasn't trying to be like, you know, your kind of rough, dank coffee shop. It's supposed to sort of almost be like for like these young professionals and like students or whatever. Well, anyway, that's not the case anymore. Everybody now, they say that Starbucks is not, it just doesn't feel very inviting. They want to get you in and out fast. Like they're like, they seem to be like less inviting and like warm. They don't really want you to sit down. And also, you know, there's so many like online orders that are coming through. So most of the time it's just like a DoorDash or a waiter person just coming in, like grab orders and go. So it just seems like it's not as, cozy a place anymore. And so now it seems like with this new policy, they're just cementing that with like buy something or like get the fuck out.
I mean, I feel like the culture around like fast food and like Starbucks, all that's changed ever since like COVID and whatnot. Like people don't just sit places anymore. Like,
I wonder why that is.
Like, we got used to being home. We got used to ordering things. Why go sit in a Starbucks when you can have Starbucks at home?
Yeah, I guess there's, like, a little bit of a something that maybe to be said even of just, like, less socialization that happens. That's probably, true, like, a bit though. Of a
people,
reach.
I don't think people were that social at Starbucks to begin with, but definitely not now.
I mean, I remember with Starbucks, I would never really go there alone if it was up to me, but sometimes I went there with, like, one or two people, and, like, it'd kind of be a little... Like, when I was in college... I mean, you remember this. No. Like, we had a Starbucks on campus, and, like, sometimes people would just do, like, group projects there or, like, kind of work on reports or homework. I would usually
they
see
people doing...
They pretend
to be productive.
Yeah, you're kind of, like, telling yourself you're being more productive. It's, like, really a social outing. I, once or twice, was, like, at Starbucks for stuff like that, so...
I've seen many an author pretend to write a book at Starbucks.
Yeah, but it sounds like they won't even be able to do that anymore. I mean, they still will. You just have to buy something.
I think most people will probably, that if they feel like they have to just sit at a Starbucks to pretend to be productive, they'll buy the expensive cup of coffee to make it happen. Like,
are you a Starbucks fan?
Am I a fan of Starbucks?
Or rather, like, you know, are you a Starbucks partaker at all?
I have partook in Starbucks.
What do you think of it?
I'm
not related to the story.
Their coffee is okay. I mean, it's on the lower end of okay. Like, a Starbucks coffee will get you by, but like,
it's nothing special.
There's nothing special about it. And I hate their like their little snack offerings. The prices on those are so high.
I know, yeah. I remember in college, when I was in our grad program, I worked with this girl from Venezuela. And she would just like, complain so much about Starbucks. Like, she was just like, their coffee is disgusting. It's so burnt and it's nasty. Mm. Like, she did not like that Starbucks coffee. And she would not, like, waste an opportunity to let you know. Like, get it from anywhere else.
You would think that a place that's supposed to be like a coffee shop could serve you a better cup of coffee than a Keurig, but they can't.
Yeah, it feels like maybe not the case. And I also remember when I was in college, there was like a girl who always had her Starbucks every morning in class. And it was like an 8 a.m. class, but she still never failed to get to Starbucks first and like bring that coffee.
For some people, it's a part of their personality, you know? Like, are you a Starbucks person? You know?
Yeah, like, are you a Starbucks girl? Do you wear your green and white? You're green and white.
That's
the colors. I guess they're colors. Because yeah. I don't like, feel like most people who go to Starbucks, the stereotype anyway is that like, it's like a girl wearing Uggs and leggings. And
I mean, isn't that just like every
or like a hipster guy who wears like a plaid kind of little shirt, like your shirt?
Hipsters don't drink at Starbucks.
Yeah, but that's like the stereotype. I'll say that they kind of maybe want you to feel.
That's like the other people, they go to Starbucks. Like.
Yeah, anyway, that's my Starbucks story. I know that wasn't. It just kind of felt like a bit of a detour, but...
Speaking of detours, I'm going to detour even further.
Okay.
You guys know, or you guys may or may not know, that I used to be an aviation major and have a strong, or at least I had a strong interest in drones. No more automatic no-fly drones. DJI puts drone safety on you.
What's that mean?
So, for you, those who don't know, DJI, they are arguably the biggest consumer drone manufacturer in the world. And if you've ever seen someone claim to be a drone pilot, they were likely flying a DJI drone. Mm-hmm. Well, for a long time, since they came out, all DJI drones had this geofencing that did not allow your drone to fly over protected spaces. That's over like military bases, large sporting events, airports. Like, your drone would actually just turn around, and if you were within that space, your drone wouldn't even take off, because you have to connect to the GPS and the internet, and DJI would ground your drone for you so that you couldn't break, you know, FAA regulations. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that was a thing DJI chose to do. No one actually made them do it. So because of pressure from the United States with like kind of aggressive trade policies going around right now, DJI said, you know what? We're not going to bother with all this nonsense anymore. You know what? You patrol your own skies. They're taking down the geofencing for all DJI users. That means that you can go out to your nearest airport, get in the parking lot, and launch your drone up immediately, despite the fact that they're landing and taking off planes, well, right there.
That's interesting. So, I mean,
don't do that. That was not me telling you to do that.
So my question is, like, I guess they're just like, are they...
The sheer amount of trouble you would be in for doing that is insane. That is a federal... That's a federal problem. Like, the spaces that DJI was keeping you out of really were for your own good. But DJI was doing that as a favor to our U.S. regulators. And since U.S. regulators are not treating DJI, quote-unquote, fairly anymore...
So they're just, like, disabling...
Disabling it, and they're saying, good luck.
So I guess this, like... fall under like malicious compliance? Even compliance. Like, I don't know.
To some degree, it's definitely petty, because the thing is, there will be a lot of people who don't know about this, and they'll take their drones up and they're going to fly in protected spaces. And the geofencing was there to stop those types of people from even getting close. There will be people who will specifically take advantage of this. You know, natural disasters are considered protected spaces, like the wildfires in Los Angeles. You are not supposed to be able to fly a drone in those spaces. And with their geofencing, your drone would just get stopped.
Okay.
That's not going to be the case here.
Interesting. I thought that maybe this was recently announced, I guess, like the last
Yes, I think that was like either today or yesterday.
Because I thought that might have had something to do with like the California wildfires, like around the Los Angeles and stuff. Like, maybe because I saw on social media people were using, like, some people were just independently flying their drones around these wildfires, even if it was like unprotected spaces or whatever.
So there actually was a serious incident from that. That was a thing.
Oh, there was an incident. What happened?
Yes,
with that?
During so it, you know, these wildfires been going on for a while. Someone's drone collided with an emergency aerial vehicle.
Oh, so that's like an example of why you really probably should not be allowed to just be like flying your drone wherever, because you could end up, you know, in a collision or something. Just like, you know, because
the thing is, planes and helicopters and whatnot, those are strong, powerful like machines, but it doesn't actually take much to cause a serious structural failure. If your drone gets sucked up into an intake of a plane or collides with like some part of a helicopter, you can cause real damage and put lives in danger, and it's especially unnecessary if their whole goal was to save lives.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
but hey, now there's drone flight freedom. You choose what regulations you break. Once again, I'm being clear. I am not telling anybody to fly their drone in protected spaces. You really just shouldn't.
Yeah.
But DJI knows that people are going to do what they're going to do.
Okay, well, here's another story. You know, typically I try to avoid being the person to bring the politics onto the podcast. But today, we need a little bit of extra engagement this week, and it seems like whenever we talk about one of these stories, people can't help themselves in the comments. So I thought this might be a really kind of interesting one that you might find exciting here for the
load. So I put on a red or a blue hat?
I mean, it's nothing quite like that, but basically, you know, like some people at least think that DEI is like a really big problem in gaming specifically right now.
Yes.
Well, there's this website called DEI Watchdog. You know, we found like some woke gaming review site like a few weeks or months ago. Well, this is a new one, or actually, I don't even know that it's new. I think it came out in like 2023, but it was trending on Twitter last week. New DEI Watchdog game rating site mocked online. And apparently, so the website called DEI Watchdog appears to have been developed in early 2023, but recently caught the attention of users on social media for its outlandish concept because it was trending on Twitter. And basically, it's just this site that like tells you, you can like look up a game and see how much like woke DEI-ness there is in the game. And I think that the reason why this one in particular is like it's gotten so much attention recently is because GTA 6, which isn't actually out yet, has right. already been like listed on their site and labeled as ultra woke. So,
oh my, the day Grand Theft Auto is ever woke.
Yeah, it got a 10 out of 10 on the ultra woke, like on their little woke meter.
Wow.
Which I don't, I'm trying to like find exactly what they said about it, like that makes it, because I mean, like the game's not even out until like later this year, right?
Like, I mean, yeah, we're not really close to its release, not.
I'm assuming it's because you can play as like a woman. Because like, aren't the two characters in GTA 6? It's like a man and a woman. You play.
I know there's a woman. Look, I don't actually play Grand Theft Auto, so I only barely pay attention.
Yeah, it looks like they also talk about that game Life is Strange, claiming it's a game about a time traveling lesbian.
Is it?
I mean, the girl can time travel, and I think she has a relation or like an implied maybe relationship with a friend. I played a little bit
at that point. Then I feel like they're just being truthful. Then maybe it is a time traveling lesbian. Does that make it woke? Not by my definition. I'm not sure what that has to do with like black people paying attention to the things happening around them. But
yeah, the website was also described as a psyop by another ex-user who said no real gamer concerned about DEI in games is going to think a game is woke just because it has women in it or members of the LGBT. If you believe that, you're just falling for a straw man. While the website is currently down, now this is like a week ago or something, it's probably up again, a text box reading website under development in its meta description describes it as a community-driven review site analyzing social messaging, representation, and cultural content in games.
It just sounds like a bunch of bad actors who want to try and destroy gaming. And like they're using like their kind of political beliefs to try and police gaming where we don't need extra oversight. Gamers are the biggest critics to games already. We didn't even need. Every gamer's a critic now. Games don't need like all this like political nonsense and judgments. Games are either good or they're bad, and that's for Kai Cenat to decide.
Right. Here's some of the content analysis page. Like there's some screenshots from it. So there's sliders that users can modify based on the game's content. So it's like, I guess you play the game, you go on the site, and like you contribute to their...
Oh, yeah. So it's like an aggregate thing.
So one of these sliders under the category of female characters ranges from hot and sexy to covered and strong, with the second option being considered the most woke.
So covered and strong is woke.
It's according to this, yes.
Basically, but what is what if I think covered is sexy?
Well, then you don't belong on this website, I guess. Now, here's male characters, meanwhile, range from manly men to sensitive boys. And you can like kind of just use a slider.
Manly men and sensitive boys.
Yeah, a review of the game Alan Wake 2 labels it a 2.4 out of a possible 5, with an 8.7 out of 10 woke content score, which would make it an ultra-woke title. Ultra-woke. The description for the review reads, woke garbage main character switched with black female. Also, games. Here's some other games that they deem to be woke. According to an archival version of the site, that game Celeste, Detroit Become Human, Borderlands 3, and Halo the Master Chief Collection.
All right. I will go ahead and say it. Okay, Detroit Become Human is woke. That's a woke game.
I don't remember what even happens in that game.
Like that game is woke. That has moments from the civil rights movement. It's about freeing yourself from the shackles of society.
Oh, so you're thinking of like what the kind of original actual definition of woke is?
Yeah, real woke. I don't know what this.
I think that they have a slightly different definition.
Yeah, I don't know about what they're on, but I love Detroit. That's a great game.
Well, you might have heard about Dragon Age: The Veil Guard, the new one.
Oh yeah,
it's apparently so woke that it earned a spot on the site's front page, where it's described as highly controversial, and according to some, quote, turned out to be a massive box office flop.
It did? No, wait, that's not possible. Because every time a game flops, the internet makes sure I know about it, no matter how uninterested I am.
The title was, in fact, EA's biggest single-player launch on PC platform Steam and broke the record for the most concurrent players game
that makes
from
sense.
Developer BioWare. It was in the top 10 best-sold games for October last year. But I guess, according to this site, though, it was still a flop. But
Veil Guard came out in October?
Yeah, it's been a few months
now. Oh, I missed.
Yeah, I gotta go back and play that. I missed
bad.
Yeah, so... I just thought that would bring this story to the pod because, you know...
More viewers.
Here on the pod of greed, anywhere you can form engagement. I'll be serious about it, though, for a second. I know a lot of people do get kind of, like, sensitive about these sort of, like, stories. They're always, like, saying, like, I'm being too mean to these woke-o-meter sites or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always so baffled that, like, I almost see them as, like, a joke. Like, the people who are making these sites, like, almost know that it's comically kind of crazy. Like, it just... You kind of just, I feel like if you're deciding to not play a game, like, based on its, like, wokeness score, like, are you really, like, in games for games? Or are you just, or have you kind of been just almost engineered to think that, like, you cannot consume something if it passes this arbitrary threshold of, like, too much representation or, like,
Like, these sites are made by bad actors who don't play games, and their entire goal is to trick a few, like wavering gamers. They love their games. They feel a little, like, put out by modern games, and now they get these woke meters to try and, like, tell them what they should play. If you need one of these sites to decide what you want to play, you're not a gamer. You're a sheep.
I imagine, like, that, I don't know, maybe there's some money in it. Like, maybe they must be, like, chasing the money.
There's always money.
I'll be clear about this. I think it's fine if you are truly opposed to the idea of, like, playing as a woman in a game or being preached to about...
Then go be Amish.
You know, or, like, being preached to about these LGBT themes that just are too much for you. I guess you don't have to play these games, but it's just sort of weird that, like, just the whole, like, dedicated website and, like, scores and numbers and sliders, it's, like, that's very strange to me.
Just wait for the Google Chrome extension.
That's probably actually going to be, like, a thing. You can get a little Chrome extension and tells you, like, if the game is too woke for you to play. But anyway, yeah, I just thought that was going to be a little fun story. People can weigh in. I'm sure they're angry right now as they listen. I don't know. I don't care for those sorts of sites.
Look, we all have our opinions. And in this case, I'm right. And everyone else is wrong.
That's how it goes. The only podcast on the internet. All right. Back to you. What do you got?
Actually, I'm tapped out of stories.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, yeah. That's great because we can talk about another big social media one, which is the TikTok ban.
Oh, yeah.
TikTok is supposed to be getting banned this Sunday. It's like the 19th. But, it seems like they always try to ban TikTok and like it always gets pushed back and delayed and pushed back and delayed.
It feels like this is going to be one of those things where on the very last day, the announcement's going to come out that it's been sold to somebody and now TikTok stays.
Yeah, well, here's what they say according to USA Today. I was reading this headline this morning. TikTok plans to shut down app in U.S. Sunday if ban holds, reports say. So here's what you need to know. Sunday is the deadline for TikTok's Beijing-based parent company ByteDance to sell its U.S. assets or allow the app to face a nationwide ban unless the Supreme Court moves to block it. What they're saying is that you're not going to be able to access the site and also, or the app, and also, like, it'll take you to this website that just tells you, like, information about the ban, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, that's what's going
to
happen.
I mean, I really have to say I don't care for the precedent of the United States, forcing a company to sell all their assets, to us, essentially, to our country.
Otherwise because it's banned.
Yeah, but otherwise we'll ban you. It's like, well, that doesn't that feel kind of like you're strong-arming them? I know it's legal because, well, the U.S. government makes the rules in the U.S., but it doesn't feel like that will be legal in any other circumstance.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on this TikTok ban, and honestly, by the time you guys are listening to this, it's probably, it's a very rapidly developing story since the deadline is so close.
It could change by the time
this pod airs. I've heard, Mr. Beast was trying to see if he could get other billionaires to kind of all team up and buy it.
Is Mr. Beast a billionaire now?
No, he's not. Oh, or okay. I don't think he is, but like he's, in contact with
that would be crazy. That would make him the first like YouTube grown billionaire, I think.
Yeah, he probably will be that if he isn't already. But anyway, so listen, I don't love TikTok. It is not like my, preferred content consumption site of choice.
I literally don't use it.
Yeah, I don't really use it. We have a Team APS TikTok where we just like repost our shorts. Yeah. So, you could say that I am a TikTok user to that capacity, but I still don't think that it should be banned. I think that to ban it just kind of feels like that's just so heavy-handed and draconian. Like, a lot of people use TikTok for entertainment. A lot of people use it for, like, self-expression, to get news and information. People shop on it. People
need to stop doing that. I'm talking to you, Dad.
People, they find, like, friends and people to follow, and so I just think that I don't want to say like a harmless app, right? Like I get that people talk about the deteriorating attention span. Some people say it's a psyop, data concerns.
What like social media like app isn't dangerous?
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I mean, it's just because Instagram, there's always like this.
I'm pretty sure I can find a Twitter page. It'll have me trafficked in 24 hours if I like enough things.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like all the other social media sites are like that, wouldn't you? I mean, like, each one kind of feels like they have something.
I mean, remember when YouTube had the ElsaGate situation?
Yeah, they can all be dangerous.
They're trying to just destroy the youth.
Yeah, they can all be dangerous. Like, there were the studies about Instagram and, like, teenagers' mental health, right? Like, mm-hmm. Also, we know that Twitter's kind of just gone to shit in the last couple of years. YouTube's had its controversies. Twitch has had its controversies.
Facebook has led to suicides.
Yeah, and Facebook's got their new little AI stuff that they're throwing on there. Like, here's this AI, like, person pretending to be Grandpa Ted.
In the past, I've been very harsh towards TikTok, but it was truly that I was harsh against all short form content. I want to amend my stance on short form content now. I'll take this opportunity to amend that statement. I think short form content actually does have a place in the zeitgeist of the modern person, mostly because it forces way in. There are healthy ways short form content can be consumed. There's healthy content out there that is purely for entertainment or even for information that isn't just brain rot. The short form is not just garbage. Yeah. And that means that even TikTok, as crazy as it is, has value. Or maybe by the time you watch this, had value.
Yeah, I know they evaluated it at like $80 billion. So whoever's buying it is going to really...
$80 billion. Oh, ain't nobody buying that. Nobody's buying that.
Yeah, maybe it's gonna have to be like a conglomerate of billionaires.
Yeah, it would have to be one of those large corporations, and even then, $80 billion.
But yeah, like I don't know. I just maybe it's the content creator in me. Maybe I'm just too young and progressive or whatever. Like, content I don't know.
Build.
But I do think that when I see, you know, I have like friends and family who like use TikTok and enjoy it. And like, I don't know, just to ban it seems like that's kind of.
Which, I mean, they could just start using Reels.
And I guess that's the idea is like, even if TikTok goes, people will just kind of
migrate. Maybe that's why Zuckerberg has been like making moves lately. He's like, ooh, I'm coming up.
Yeah, he's got a lot to say. Plenty of opinions on him. But yeah, so, you know, hopefully somebody buys or maybe they can. I know that they've been trying to like defer it another like 270 days or something.
Which at that point, you might as well just either sell it or don't. But let's not drag this out.
I don't know. I also feel like this stuff like this, and I'm going to actually, like, I'm going to get political in, like, an actual political way, not, like, a joking about some DEI site.
I'll make the jokes for you, don't worry.
Well, no, I mean, like, I do mean this. I think that when, and I know, like, Biden or someone, like, signed this thing to get this TikTok app banned. I know they've been trying to ban it for a while. It seems like Supreme Court kind of, they've got their minds made up on this. Things like this, like banning apps like this, I think is why so many young people begin to just distrust and eventually become just completely, you know, turned off to like government mm-hmm. and like and structure and stuff like that. And that's, this is not a like only left or right thing. I'm just being serious here. Like when I say, I think that every time that you hear about your government is trying to take away this thing that you have been enjoying, you can be a person who enjoys right-wing content on TikTok. You can be a person who enjoys left-wing content on TikTok. Either way, TikTok's going. And it's going because like your congressmen really barely even understand how it works, and they want to take it away from you. And so anytime that that's happening, it's just like it begins to corrode, I think, people's faith in their lawmakers and stuff. Like, I don't know.
I mean, I would feel like to congratulate our lawmakers, actually.
Okay.
Here comes the joke. Because they managed to ban TikTok before passing any sort of regulation to help out with all the school shootings.
Yeah, or like healthcare, all these things.
What a great job.
And I know, like, that's going to... There are some people who are, like, you know, cheering for TikTok to go. And it's an easy angle to take if you don't really use it a lot. Like a lot of people are like, oh, these kids and their dumb TikToks are like, well, I don't use it, so who cares if it gets banned? And I get why you might feel that way, but it's very much one of those what comes next sort of situations. Mm-hmm. Like right now, you might not use TikTok and you think it's just a dumb thing that these Gen Alpha kids and Gen Z kids are dancing and singing and saying crazy things. But once TikTok's gone, that kind of sets a dangerous precedent of like what else could go if some people in the Supreme Court don't like it.
State-controlled media.
So that's kind of why I think like it's just, I hope that it that they can just figure out a more amicable solution in some way or form. So, yeah.
Paul.
Yeah.
This was too serious. I think it's time to unwind with some pot.
Well, before we do, I did want to talk about one other cool media thing that happened just
is
earlier
today. Is it
cool
today. Or is it political?
It's pretty cool.
Oh, okay.
It's a pretty cool one. Did you see the Daredevil Born Again trailer today?
I did. I did see the trailer.
What'd you think?
It felt like a return to form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the last couple of appearances of Daredevil in these MCU-esque works, the appearance in Echo and appearance in She-Hulk, had me kind of worried for Born Again, because while I enjoy, you know, jokey, you know, unserious Daredevil,
yeah,
the Netflix series that I loved, you know, way back in like, what was that 2014? Was that 2014? Somewhere around there.
Yeah, 2015 was when season one
2015.
Was, and then it got like two more seasons.
Know, that was a grittier, it was a hard-hitting show and narrative, and it was a shame to have to think, at least at the time, that, you know, that's done, that's over with, and now we're going to have, you know, Matt Murdock who cracks
more jokes than
skulls.
He sleeps around, and it's just like a whole funny little thing. No, I'm glad. I saw that trailer, and I was like, this is good. It seems like, I remember, you know, hearing about a lot of difficulties with filming
changing and like everything
and all that. But I'm glad they got back the original cast. I saw John Bernthal in that.
Yep.
I saw, so like The Punisher. I saw,
What, Vincent D'Onofrio?
Yeah.
Or how do you pronounce his name?
Yeah, and also Bullseye from the end of season 3. Yeah, like all those villains are like in here, and of course they've got like, you know, Foggy Nelson, Karen Page, like the gang's back together. I'm hype.
And that was such a Daredevil trailer, just like Matt and Wilson Fisk sitting down. It was like a diner to have a very frank,
uncomfortable conversation.
That you could feel was the so Daredevil. It didn't feel anything like a Disney Plus like MCU work. So I'm locked in for it.
I feel like the only thing I'm gonna miss is like the ability to binge it, because I loved how on Netflix, like if you really want to just be a degenerate all day, like just wake up and just binge, you know, 12 hours or whatever of the show, you could. But
not, I mean, that's what we did, right?
Yeah, that's what we did.
The first season of Daredevil,
watching that stuff,
we sat there for a full, was it the full Saturday and Sunday?
Yeah, like just like just split across 2 days, because like that was back when all these Netflix shows would have 13 episodes and each episode was like 55 minutes. So like it was basically these like just 12 hours on average of like just good gritty Daredevil entertainment.
And
like,
you could just, we had no responsibilities.
Yeah, it was fun. And I, you know, still though, I get it. Like, they got to do the kind of weekly Disney Plus thing. Unless they're not doing that. Maybe they're going to be just dumping the whole thing. They did that for Echo.
Yeah, they didn't believe in Echo.
Yeah, that's probably what it was. But Daredevil showed up in Echo.
I mean, that was also one of the reasons I was worried.
Yeah, because Echo kind of ties into this, since she has a little relation with like Wilson Fisk, and then like he ends up going back to New York or whatever afterwards.
I mean, I expect that we will see some sort of a cameo from another MCU work. I wouldn't mind if it's Echo, but it might be someone else too. But I think they're going to be careful about tying that into too much other stuff, because it's such a darker narrative than anything else they got going on.
Yeah, but I'm glad that really sort of made my day. It just was like seeing this trailer, because I know, like, I don't even know how much I consider like Daredevil to be like an MCU thing. It's always in my heart been more of like a Netflix Marvel thing. Like those always feel a little different. But either way, it's I think it's very, very exciting, and I will be looking forward to that bigly.
I think it's one of those things where it's like the fans won, because you know, the MCU, Marvel, they got all the rights back to Daredevil. They could have done anything they wanted to do with that character. And they heard the outcry. They saw the results of the Netflix shows. They could have ignored all that. They said, no, this is what people are clamoring for. This is what they want. While in a lot of executives, they don't want to trust such things, but someone said, let's bet on them. Let's bet on the fans.
I think people are give them the show they want. You know, a fun thing actually was when we were in New York Comic Con, I made it to the very tail end of Charlie Cox's like thing where he announced the date that Daredevil was going to drop, like March 4th. He was actually there, and there was like a huge crowd of people, and he was talking a little bit about it. And so that was cool. I got to like see him from a distance.
Is he blind in real life?
It's always so hard to like imagine him as like not blind, because he acts it so well. I would say like he does that thing where he's like not looking at the person but like looking at them and that whole thing. So, cool. All right, yeah. Now we can actually decompress with a few questions from the Pot of Greed from the viewers.
But as you know, guys, your questions are so long and detailed they do not fit in the pot anymore.
Yeah, I'm gonna be reading them from the tablet. I'm gonna start giving you a few of these questions. You can start reading them.
I'm so congested. So you got it.
Yeah. So, as always, if you guys want to submit questions to the pot for us to chat and talk about, you can always do that in the link in the description below. Okay. So, here is the first question. Hey, my name's Coda. Thank you guys in advance.
What's up, Coda?
If you choose this one, what's the worst you've ever raged or seen someone rage over a duel or a Yu-Gi-Oh related situation? I once saw someone dueling an individual new to the game with special needs, and he called this person an insignificant worm. He proceeded to get a game loss, and the shop owner handled the situation as respectfully as possible. So that sounds intense. He called him an insignificant worm.
Though I think if you've been in the Yu-Gi-Oh space long enough, you've probably seen worse.
Yeah. It is crazy. I've seen some shit. like kind of go down over Yu-Gi-Oh. I've also heard some rumors that like I can't necessarily, I don't know if some of this stuff is true.
Misinformation.
But what have you like seen at a tournament? Like what's the angriest someone's raged or that you've raged?
I choose to believe I've never raged after a Yu-Gi-Oh game. This might be a selective memory thing where I was blocked out that specific memory. Light. But I think it was at a regional. I literally watched a guy while he's losing the game, and I know he's losing the game because he's vocally grunting and like fidgeting, stomping his feet and kind of banging on the table. And every time his opponent like plays a card, it's like a dagger is going through his entire body. He's shaking in just anger and vitriol. And I want to say it was before the game was over, like officially. He just snatched up his things, haphazardly threw his cards into a deck box, and he stormed off, like kind of kicking the chair on his way out. Yeah. I want to say he cursed his opponent out. I can't confirm that. My memory is fuzzy.
I've seen, typically that's kind of how it goes, is like there will be somebody who's slowly losing their temper as the game is getting played. Like
actually something losing.
Something kind of like gets negated, their stuff gets negated again, and like they kind of, you can just sort of see them, the temperature rising in the room. When you look at those like video compilations of like salty Yu-Gi-Oh moments, that's usually kind of how it tends to go.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen somebody sling, like I guess it's just like a kid or someone's deck against like a wall. That was a local sometime.
That's impressive. They like picked up the stack of cards and just...
I think it's because he lost to some kid's burn deck or something.
Oof.
Like some kid's burn deck, or maybe he bricked or whatever. This was like in 2000 and like maybe 9 or something like that. And like he just like flings like the card just, you know, against the wall. And I remember I was pretty young at the time. Like I was maybe just like 14. So I was just like kind of paralyzed and fearing, like, oh my God, like what is going on here? I think he had to replace everything, like all the kids' cards, which might not have been like worth a bunch, but like.
He's like, oh, those cards were all max rarity.
Yeah, this actually turned out it's like a Dragon Duel kid and all this stuff's like ultimate. No, but I think he had to replace the kid's stuff. He got like banned for X amount of months, something like that. Yeah, that was, I think, the craziest that I've seen. But I have also seen at some YCS events and like regionals, I've seen some shouting contests.
Oh, they yell.
Yeah, I definitely seen some shouting contests. You've seen some?
That I haven't seen. I've heard them.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Sometimes you just hear them from across the room.
Because oftentimes, you know, I'm in the back table, so I can't see things, but I'll certainly hear them. I've heard arguments with judges.
Yeah, those usually get nasty.
I've seen pushing matches.
You've seen pushing matches?
People I've seen push pushing matches.
Yu-Gi-Oh? Interesting.
It wasn't at the table where the game was being played. It was like off to the side. I think they got into an argument. Like one of them was salty about the results of their game, and
yeah,
some pushing ensued. They both got escorted out.
Yeah, that's crazy. I remember I heard. I think this is when we were at like maybe the 2018 Nationals or something like that.
Was that Chicago?
No, this is this one in Texas or something. Oh, okay. And people, this wasn't like something that happened at the table, but I remember like hearing that people had like smashed someone's window and like stolen all the cards out of their car in the parking garage.
Oh, that's Dallas. That's just a regular day.
So I heard that was something that happened. But yeah, as for stuff that's like happened at games, I've seen a lot of ragey moments. I am thankful that I have never been on the receiving end of like just, you know, kind of a pouting, fussing, like, man-child situation. Like, I've had certainly people get, like, a little bit tense and, like, sort of short with me over, like, a loss, but...
That's me every time I lose to you.
But, no, worse than you. Worse than you could ever be. These are just people where it's like, oh, you can tell they're probably like this at locals every week. Yeah, I've seen some of that, but I have not ever, like, you know, no one's tried to attack me yet. Or even really insulted me to my face, but... Probably behind my back, I'm sure.
I do want to make it clear, it's not just Yu-Gi-Oh! While Yu-Gi-Oh! Is probably the worst game to lose at, it feels the worst. I find that the same people who act out when losing at Yu-Gi-Oh! Will act out losing at literally anything.
Yeah, I actually would argue that Yu-Gi-Oh! Probably doesn't even... I don't even know if I'd call it like close to the worst. Like, I think on average, fighting games seem like they're Like, I just feel like I've seen more characters at fighting games. You know what I mean? Like, just people throwing controllers.
Because all it's right. harder to... Like, I was at your scene, and... I don't know if that's just the average.
Well, but like but a lot of times, okay, have you seen like those videos on YouTube though, where it's like, you know, these like salt montages from like Smash Bros. Tournaments? It's just like 20 minutes of just these clips of people like slamming controllers, throwing chairs, like.
But that's because no one's recording all the card game tournaments.
That's probably true. I don't know. I think like people on average don't get like chair throwing, table flipping like as often.
Like I think the bigger thing that I see in the card gaming space is that a lot of people are just not really good sports.
Yeah.
A lot of people do not know how to take a loss with grace. A lot of people think that, you know, just because I didn't curse my opponent out, I took that loss well.
But they'll like, still, oh my God, yeah.
If you are so twisted up into a pretzel where like your opponent came and speak to you after they beat you, you're not a good loser. I think you're not a good sport.
I think that's actually a really good point is there is this whole like, you know, learning how to take losses well is just like, there's like a simple question, but I guess I'll extrapolate a little bit more. And it's been a shorter podcast, so I think I've earned the right to talk a little bit more about this.
Hey, this post-game stuff.
Is I think that there's just as much of an argument to being like, you know, a sore winner as a sore loser. Like there are sore winners in this game. There are sore losers in this game. There's people who like they like to play the if game, right? Like if I had just drawn this, if I'd seen this or you know,
I would have zigged when I zagged.
There's the discrediting of like your win. I've heard that from plenty of people where like
I didn't lose to you, I lost to your cards.
Yeah, I didn't lose to you, I lost to your cards, or I lost to myself, or it's because I didn't see this line or this misplay. It's kind of weird. It's like
the sheer amount of people who've told me I lost to myself is insane.
It's so that one's always such a funny one because you can just really see the egos just crumbling and like just making every attempt possible to kind of save some degree of face is like, you know, you didn't win, I just lost. Like that whole, you know, we've joked about that like in some skits and stuff.
Feels salt when they lose because no one wants to lose. And, but like having that extra level of mindfulness to catch yourself is actually seeming a fairly rare skill because, you know, when I lose in a card game, there'll be many times where I'll say, like, I misplayed, I made this mistake, and I lost for it. But I always remember to say, but you played that really well. I made a mistake, and you capitalized on it, and you would not let me get my way back into the game. I never want to take the win away from my opponent.
And it's,
even
it's
if I do think I lost because of my misplay, I will at least give my opponent the credit that they still won that. Like, that wasn't just a loss on my part.
Yeah, I think for me, it's also kind of been like that. Like, I'm not, like, a very expressive person in general. Most people kind of know this about me. But, like, you know, I'm not super expressive in a win. I'm not super expressive in defeat. But I've gotten, I think, a lot better over the years. I don't think I'm sort of, like, not doing this. But I just make it a point now to, like, you know, let people know, like, well played. Because, you know, it even if you feel like you messed something up, I like the point that you raised, which is that it's still on your opponent to like capitalize on that situation. Mm-hmm. So like if somebody makes a misplay, it could cause them to lose the game or it couldn't. Like, you know, it almost goes back to my thing about like I always tell people that they shouldn't just quit and give up so easily.
Right.
Because like I've played Master Duel a bunch and like I'll just make these misplays. I'm like, oh my God, I totally goofed this. But I'm not going to quit because, like, what if my opponent didn't know that I goofed? What if they didn't catch it? What if they didn't, like, you know, smell the blood in the water and go for the win? And sometimes I'll still win those games, even after, like, kind of a mishap. And
sometimes so, your opponent's just as sloppy as you. You made a misplay, they misplay right back.
Yeah, it almost makes me think, like, you know, you have to keep in mind that no one's, like, having it. It seems like it from the outside looking in, like, oh, I got max seed. Oh, they just flip trap cards on me all day or whatever, floodgates. No one's actually having it that easy with this game.
Yeah, nobody plays Yu-Gi-Oh! Perfectly. The best players in the world are still human, and they can and will make mistakes.
Yeah,
and except for Jesse Cotton. I don't know if he can do that.
Yeah. It's like, it's very, Yu-Gi-Oh! Is a very tense game, and I think that I've seen so many situations on feature match stages or just at locals on a normal day where people will just forget things and just these brief lapses in judgment, they'll beat themselves up over it. But what I always want to remind people of is like, I promise to you, this game is, it's just not easy. It's just, it's a difficult game to play. There's a lot of effects going around. There's a lot of conditions to remember. there are a lot of lines and stuff to quickly identify, and it's highly, highly, like, just, you know, it tests a lot of you. And so I say that to further kind of focus in on the point that, like, even if you made a misplay, your opponent still deserves credit for, like, winning, because they're under the same duress as you, like, mm-hmm. when you're playing this game.
They weren't in a better position than you. You know, y'all both sitting at the same table.
Yeah, Yu-Gi-Oh's hard on everyone. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard on all of us. There's a lot to remember. There's a lot to keep up with. So, yeah, I usually just tell my opponents, like, listen, well played. Because at least as a player, I pride myself the most on being difficult to beat. I don't pride myself on, like, beating everyone, but I pride myself on being, like, I'm a tough player to, like, get a win on, if that makes sense. So I'll always try my best to not give up.
That's because your expression's the same at the beginning of the game. And even when you're about to lose, you never break.
Well, I do think I've got a pretty good poker face.
Upsetting.
But what I mean is, it's like, I'm not here to give away freebies. Even if I screw everything up, like, I'm still going to make you, like, get that victory off me. And if you are good enough to get it, then I think that it's only right that I, like, acknowledge and congratulate that. It's like, you know, hey, you, like, well played, because I was not planning on letting you win this. So, yeah.
We hope that answered the question. Yeah, I think we answered a few others along the way.
Yeah, just be a good sport. Try not to throw people's cards against the wall, because that's really quite insane.
And don't put your hands on people. You'll be banned for.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Shops will get rid of you in a heartbeat. Anyway, so somebody asked, this is Blue Yeti, if there was a Yu-Gi-Oh! Time capsule where you had to put in one Yu-Gi-Oh! Themed item that's meaningful, but that you wouldn't see again for 25 years, what would you pick? A Yu-Gi-Oh! Time capsule. So, like, this is going to be opened again in 25 years. 25 almost seems too short. Maybe, like, make it, like, 50 or
100. Once you're in your 30s, 25 years doesn't feel that crazy.
I know, yeah. I guess I don't know, but soon enough I'll know.
You'll know soon.
Yeah, what are you putting inside of this Yu-Gi-Oh! Time capsule? Or what Yu-Gi-Oh! Thing are you putting inside of a general time capsule of the current
day? I'm putting in a copy of Yu-Gi-Oh! Duelist of the Roses and a PS2 to play it.
Hmm. That's cool. Yeah, I think that could be fun. I was going to say, like, I guess this isn't really...
Actually, 25 years is enough. Let's make it 200 years.
Yeah. Would there be something today that you would put in it? Like, because since it's, like, technically, Duels of the Roses would be, like, for a time capsule from, like, 2004 or whatever year it came out, 2003, 4, or 5.
It's hard for me because, as I've said before, I want my most important cards buried with me. Mm-hmm. So,
like, if I had to pick something from just Yu-Gi-Oh! History, so, like, I can pick Duels of the Roses, then kind of older, I would say that I would either put in one of those Yu-Gi-Oh! Skateboards, because for some reason those just feel kind of...
I've yet to see you skateboard.
Well, yeah, but I had it. I had the skateboard.
You gotta skate first.
I think I'd put the Pot of Greed, like the life size one. Like, I'd put this one, like, I would put that in the...
I don't think it would survive, Paul.
It probably wouldn't.
That was, it's like, it degrades.
It's probably a little too big. But, like, I think that it would be kind of fun. But maybe, like, all right, I had to put a card in. What card would you put into a time capsule?
A card that encapsulates. It's gotta have, like, a strong Yu-Gi-Oh.
I was gonna say maybe something you have a strong memory.
No. You gotta put the strongest card of today in, so that when someone opens it in 25 years, like, what is this weak garbage?
Yeah. Put a Maxi in there and, like, this thing sucks.
Put a Fiendsmith Engraver in there. Let's see how it ages.
Is there a personal card to you that you would put inside of a time capsule?
No, because my personal cards are to be buried with me, as we established on a previous
episode. Okay, yeah, but, like, if you had to put one in a time capsule.
If I just had to, I put a Neospatian in.
You put a Neospatian? Oh, like Jaden.
Because he put
his pictures of the
Neo. Set it to space.
Would you put in, like, maybe your Ancient Gear Golem?
Absolutely not. That goes with me.
It's too special. I was going to say, I might put in, like, one of my graded, like, I've got a, oh, so I have actually have a copy of Air Neos. And I think that might be fun to put in because, like, if you think it's, like, rare now, imagine in, like, 25 or, like, 50 years, like, this card might actually be, like, considered, like, a Mandela effect.
I mean, type you say thing. Imagine. I mean, 25 years will pass, and that card will still not have been reprinted.
Yeah. Like, it makes me wonder, like, will there be a a Mandela effect almost. Like, because like right now, everyone still
knows. Does anyone remember where they were when?
Well, no, but seriously, think about it, right? Right now, we all know that Aranios was printed. Like, we know it. There's physical copies. You can prove it. 2007. There's actually commercials where this happened. But like in 25 years.
Those commercials will still exist on the internet.
Yeah, but like it might start to kind of be like a little like, maybe it's like a psyop. Like there might be theories that it didn't.
No. I feel like the Mandela effect only works for things before the internet was really the internet.
That's true.
Like the Berenstain Bears.
Yeah. Was it Berenstain or Berenstain?
See, that's that shit that upsets me.
Well, which was it? Tell me.
It was the Berenstain Bears. And I don't care what anyone says.
I actually, so everybody's like, you know, Berenstain, Berenstain. I actually thought it was the Berenstain. When I was a kid,
you had to be different.
I had to be different. When I was a kid and I was reading those books, and we had a lot of them at my house.
We all magically did, didn't we? We all just happened to have the entire collection of this one book series.
Yeah, the Berens. I always called it like the Berenstain Bears, but I think my sister called it the Berens. I don't know what she said. Maybe that's part of the Mandela effect. It is most I don't even
likely
remember.
Is.
But I remember I called them the Berenstain Bears. Like I remember I had a few of the books. Like there was the mom and the brother and the sister and the dad. There were bears. Kind of golden colored, and like I remember the books. I just, Anyway, yeah, I think I'd maybe just throw my Aranios in there. It feels like that would be kind of fun.
Maybe we put the giant cards in.
I mean, if you could fit them.
Oh, fair.
There are giant. There actually are like large time capsules, though. Like there are ones that are like just these entire structures installed in places they're not meant to be built. Yeah, putting a giant card in could be fun. I might do that. Maybe we should do that. Like, just actually make a Yu-Gi-Oh! Time capsule. Like, for a YouTube video or something, it'd be fun. Just bury it somewhere.
Yeah, someone's going to dig it up and sell it.
Where do you... That's true. If you make a video about it, they're just going to... Someone's going to just find it.
They're going to dig it up and sell it.
You know what we'd have to do? We'd have to make the time capsule, and then, like... But, like, we don't actually show the burying of it. Or, like, we show it, but, like, it's filmed in such a way that it's like extremely ambiguous where we are. We blur stuff out. Like it's super close up, so you don't even get to see.
It's going to end up in a landfill.
That's probably what will really happen to it. Corporate America is just going to like, they dig it up as they're building a new building. It's thrown to a landfill.
I think the only chance you have of like, of legitimately hiding something is just go out to a desert.
Yeah.
You go out to like the Southwest somewhere and you just start digging a hole.
Yeah. Okay. Well, here's the next question. Hey guys, love your content. Heart, my question is, what do you guys suggest for a person that has primarily played Duel Links and only in person with friends to get into the game? I'm actually really nervous about card shops. I feel very out of place despite the shop owner being fairly personable. My love of Yu-Gi-Oh! Stems from the anime and I enjoy Duel Links very much, but I also like old decks such as Amazonas. The closest thing I play to modern would be Unchained or Evil Eye. Thanks a ton. Keep up the great work. Sincerely, Chimera.
All right. The old nemesis. Card shops and Yu-Gi-Oh! Fans who aren't necessarily like in the weeds of card game playing.
Yeah, what's your advice? What's Chimera got to do to kind of overcome this anxiety of going to a card shop and maybe eventually get into playing Yu-Gi-Oh!
So the group of friends that you've been playing with at home, y'all should go to the card shop together. And play at the card shop. Yeah. You don't have to enter into the card shop's, you know, Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournament. That's a bit of like jumping into the lion's den.
Yeah.
Because some Yu-Gi-Oh! Tournaments are very casual and some are very sweaty. And if you're not a regular, you have no way of knowing that. I recommend you and your friends, you go to the card shop and you take your kitchen counter Yu-Gi-Oh! And you just play it there. And by just playing Yu-Gi-Oh! In the shop, the regular Yu-Gi-Oh! Players will find their way around and they'll mix in, they'll ask for games and
yeah, they'll talk about cards and stuff.
And then you'll be the ball will be in your court then to decide how much further do you want to go. Are these guys playing the type of Yu-Gi-Oh! That you're playing? If they're not, are they willing to?
Yeah, and you know, also does the type of Yu-Gi-Oh! That you see at the card shop seem like something that you would be willing to play? Because, you know, sometimes there is this like weird uninviting air that you might have around Yu-Gi-Oh! If you only heard horror stories online, like where it's like everyone's sweating and like the game's crazy.
Which is
and
what you'll hear if you're not like in.
But like, yeah, I agree with you. You know, you got to go to the card shop and just see what that's like. And I know it's easier said than done, but that is why the suggestion of like get the friends that you've played with and like go to the card shop together if it's possible. And that
make
way
your
you guys
own little locals.
You can all kind of like sit down, play some games. And yeah, I promise, like, it's moths to a flame. People will see you playing, and they will gravitate over. And some will be, like, maybe rude and, you know, correct your misplays or something. Others will just kind of sit and watch silently, and they won't say anything. And then still, there will be a few others who are, like, very friendly and want to just sort of see what you're playing and, like, you know, maybe give you some cards, maybe trade.
My personal tactic is when I'm entering into a new shop and I want to attract the Yu-Gi-Oh! Populace, I buy some packs. And I just start to slowly open them.
Oh, yeah. Sit down and open the packs.
It's like moths to a flame.
Yeah, that'll really get the...
Like, Yu-Gi-Oh! Packs being opened will bring them in.
Yeah. Brings all the boys to the yard. I think that those are both good ways. Like, if you have to go alone, then, yeah, just buy a few packs. Sit and open them. People will flock over. Or if you can go with your friends, go with your friends and play. And just bring out the decks and play. It's kind of one of those things where, like, nerds are always kind of, and I say nerds, like, in the not excluding myself type of way, but, like, nerds at card shops playing their little geeky games, we aren't, like, the most naturally sociable people, but the moment there's some shared interest.
That's true. If we were, we wouldn't be playing card games.
Yeah, maybe we'd be out partying or whatever, but no. Once the cards show up on the table, I feel like they kind of do a lot of the talking and stuff for you. Like, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean? Yu-Gi-Oh! Replaced communication for me a long time ago.
Yeah, so also it sounds like you already, you play Duel Links, so despite like, you make it sound like, oh, the only modern decks I play are Unchained and Evil Eye, but the truth is those decks can be played in the TCG. So you're not so far behind.
Yeah, as long as your deck is, legal.
Yeah. So good luck. Honestly, I hope that you can go to your card shop and enjoy the experience. And it sounds like push comes to shove. The shop owner seems nice, so that should help.
Just take it slow, right? It's not a race, right?
Yeah. All right, so final question is, what's your favorite quote or scene from the original Duel Monsters anime? Favorite quote or scene? I've got a favorite quote, and I think I've got a favorite scene.
I know my scene. I'm trying to find my quote still.
Okay, my favorite quote is... this is a sick burn from Yami Yugi. This is in the Duelist Kingdom arc when he is playing against the like shadow kind of evil Kaiba. Like Pegasus sets up, that match. He's like kidnapping Mokuba and he sets up this match with like right. Kaiba, and everyone's like, Kaiba's like, not supposed to be, that's not the real Kaiba, like he's not alive or whatever. And then finally like the duel happens, Yugi's dueling this evil Kaiba guy, and then eventually he like transforms to this ugly clown person or whatever. And Yugi's like, I guess I don't know what to call you. I wanted to say monster, but I didn't want to insult the cards. And I was like, woo, damn, Yugi. Yami, chill.
Don't do him like that.
Apply burn heal. Jeez, that was kind of rude. Yeah, I thought that was like, that's my favorite quote.
You gotta respect the cards.
Do you have a favorite quote?
My favorite quote in Yu-Gi-Oh, I think my favorite Yu-Gi-Oh from like DM era is actually not the Yu-Gi-Oh DM anime, but the
like a manga thing.
It was the movie. Which movie was that?
Was it Pyramid of Light?
It's the one where Joey is taking on all the challengers trying to face Yugi at the beginning.
Oh, that's Pyramid of Light, I think.
Is that Pyramid of Light?
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd, they're taunting Joey, and they're like, we want the king of games, not the king of cards, not the king of clowns. And there's clowning Joey.
The king of games, not the king of lames. Is that from the movie? The king of games, not the king of lames.
It was in the movie. I don't remember the exact quote. And that's when Joey starts calling himself, I'm the godfather of games.
Yeah, I do remember that.
I always remember that. That was funny.
My favorite scene from the Duel Monsters anime, I think this is my favorite scene, I might be forgetting one, is really, it's my favorite duel, is like Yugi versus Kaiba Battle City Finals. Like, they're in the semifinals. And it's like Yugi versus Kaiba, just because that duel is very back and forth. And like, it actually is the closest I feel like that anime ever really gets to like kind of feeling like a real Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel might go. And so anyways, there's this part in like the first sort of episode of the duel or whatever where, you know, obviously the Egyptian god cards have been a big deal. This duel has been hyped up to be like this clash between like Obelisk and Slifer. Like, you know, who's going to get their god card out first? That'll be a huge advantage. And also they have to like first draw the card. And so Kaiba activates this one card. I forget exactly what it is, but it's like a card that he's planning on using to get Yugi's card from Yugi's deck into his hand. So he's going to like force Slifer. I think it's like, maybe not Lullaby of Obedience, but like something kind of like that. It might even be that. To like get Yugi's Slifer out of his deck into his hand. He like kind of makes this taunty joke about like, oh, you know, like, Slifer was so deep in your deck, you were never going to draw it anyway. And then Yugi uses the quick play, because they're all quick plays in the show, exchange to, like, flips up exchange, so now it's like, oh, so now I have to both, like, trade cards. And it's kind of, it's weird, because, like, they actually just walk up to each other in the middle of the stadium, which like, you don't see that very much in Yu-Gi-Oh! They walk up to each other in the middle of the stadium and, like, you know, exchange their cards and pick one. Like, Kaiba's pissed off, because, like, you know, he went to all this trouble to get Slifer, and like Yugi turned it around on him. But the coolest thing is, like, right after that, like, Yugi, he says something like, you know, he's walking away, and he's just like, I appreciate your help. Slifer's in my hand, thanks to you. And then the episode ends with the digital, like, hologram crowd, because they're dueling in this Roman Colosseum, starts chanting, like, Yugi, Yugi. And I just thought that was the funniest thing, because it's like, Kaiba programmed this crowd.
And the, like, crowd turned.
And they turned on him. It's just like they're chanting your, like, your opponent's name. Like, you programmed the shit, bro. Like, that must suck. I always thought that was like a very memorable scene for me. What about you, though?
My most memorable scene has to go to Para and Dox's intro.
Oh, yeah. That's iconic.
Like, you know, they were twins and I'm a twin. And the way they spoke together and in sync,
and
they did their rhyming, and they did their little, like, their back flips and front flips, and they were a lot.
Oh my god, do you remember the Paradox, like, intro?
I'm gonna see you have now you have entered sacred ground where only duelists can be found. Something now begin. You notify your next of kin.
That line was cold. Oh, yeah, notify your next of kin. Like, you're making it like you're gonna die down here in this dungeon.
And say, we didn't know that was the Paradox, like, cipher.
That line. I love that line. Oh my god, I wanted to find it. I can't. I love that line.
It's like, I can find it, because I remember
looking this up for
a video a while ago.
This is a big deal. We need,
like,
to.
Like, it was the Paradox Brothers intro quote.
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, man. I need to know this.
Let's see. Not from Duel Links.
Well, either way, I know that it's probably on YouTube. Let's see. I bet I can find it on YouTube.
I mean, yeah, there's definitely videos of it.
The point is, yes, no, that's definitely, like, that's an iconic one, 100%.
I wish Alex were here. He knows that one front to back.
Yeah, I think that also was, like, the coolest tag duel. Because it wasn't just a 2-on-2. It was also, like, the maze.
Yeah, the maze aspect. And that was the first time we saw Yugi and Joey working together.
They were always friends,
but they'd never worked together in a match before.
Yeah, I thought that was a very good, like, kind of just capstone for a lot of their character growth. You know, so yeah, that was fun. And it also introduced the Black Skull Dragon.
Yep, Black Skull Dragon was there. We got epic monsters like War Shadow and Jirai Gumo.
And Labyrinth Tank. I remember that was a...
The Menace.
Yeah, it's funny because I remember, I think some kid pulled a Labyrinth Tank when I was in school, and it was just like this shitty fucking fusion monster.
I was mad when I found out, like, Shadow was bad.
Yeah. There were so many old cards that were like that. Just... in the show, they just had this way of making it such a moment when these monsters, like the labyrinth tank, you know, it moves seven spaces because it's like it's level seven and it's like it's so strong and threatening and all this stuff. And just like, you fucking get the card in real life and you're never going to summon this thing. And like, it has no effect at all. Like,
I got my wall shadow, so I can't wait to somehow abuse this with like the magical labyrinth. And
yeah, then you realize you gotta
jump through every hoop in the world just to summon the thing. And yeah, then
like all these cards like don't have any effects,
do anything.
The gate guardian pieces suck because like you read them once and you realize, oh, your opponent has to attack this.
Yeah, they're bad. Gate guardian has always been bad, and I do not know. I mean, the retrains that does help, but the original gate guardian
was
really, really bad. That Exodia class thing. Why do I feel like that didn't even exist in the sub? I feel like they added that in.
That feels like that's like a dub thing.
Because like that thing is nothing like Exodia.
But I always got really like hyped about like, you know, when he's like, that's in the class of Exodia. Like what all monsters are considered like in the class of Exodia? Like is it a Gate Guardian and
I remember Exod from the Earth Starter deck.
Well, but like I always, like in the anime, you know? Because when they said it implied that like there would be other monsters that would be like, like the Egyptian gods, I guess, are in the class of Exodia, which is always funny to me because, like, you know how they would say, like, the Egyptian god cards are even stronger than Exodia when they actually just aren't.
Yeah, they're not.
Like, Exodia just automatically wins.
There's nothing Exodia can't beat.
Whereas, like, we have literally watched, like, every person who's had a god card, like, lose a duel with it.
We've seen the god cards combine to give Obelisk infinite attack and still lose.
Yeah, so it's kind of like Exodia just says, like, yeah, I win. But anyway, okay, yeah, That's it for this episode, I guess.
Yes. Thank you guys for another episode of The Pod of Greed.
Next week, and I feel pretty confident saying this, should be our first guest of the year.
Ooh.
A guest on the podcast. We actually have a couple of them lined up. We're
about to be one of those podcasts now.
Yeah, some are very exciting. We've got, you know, potentially some... I'm not even going to spoil it. There's stuff that you guys, I think, will... Really insightful people who've got a lot of cool things to say.
Stay tuned for iShow Speed.
Yeah, okay. And also, we can't afford that. If you guys, you know, want to, you can join as a channel member. It's a small, like $2.99 a month or something to support the pod.
It's a growing massive force.
Yeah, you get the Pod of Greed emote beside your name. And yeah, we appreciate it if you did. But without further ado,
we'll see you in the next one.
Pass turn.